criticize or point fingers. Any other thoughts about criminalizing our unhoused, our people with mental health challenges, people with substance use disorders?
Yeah, I wanted to kind of follow up on your comments, but I also wanted to close on a positive note. Like, first of all, I just wanted to, you know, just say that the recent death of Rob Reiner, you know, really illustrates why it's so important for us to have comprehensive mental health care for folks in our community, including our own family members who go in and out of transitional housing. Sometimes they're living on the streets. You know, sometimes they're in states where they really need some support. And it's really important for us to have the kind of resources at hand as a society where we're able to help these people, because otherwise we see really tragic and unnecessary deaths like the one that happened with Rob Reiner. We saw a very similar death happen earlier this year here in Oregon. But I wanted to end on a positive note, Karen. I got an email earlier today from the OJRC, who we've talked about a couple of times today on the show. OJRC had sent out a message right before Christmas, and they had announced that there were three people who had been illegally detained again. They had been released from prison in Oregon, and then they came back and they picked them up and they brought them back to prison. And it was finally ruled just this last week that those detentions were illegal and that they violated their rights, and they were immediately released again. So three people who had been released and then had been detained again, even though it was a violation of their sentence to re-imprison them, got released again. And that was thanks to the hard work of the OJRC. Those three people got to spend the holidays with their families here in Oregon. So that's a little good news.
Well, see you all next year. Have a wonderful new year, everyone, and all the best from all of us at Prison Pipeline. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, and thank you for listening.
Free them all.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kbu.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214 to contribute to KBU's $75,000 goal for our KBU Fights Back campaign, going on now until December 31st. What better way to celebrate than by gifting your loved one a KBU membership this season?
Two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Welcome. I'm going to let everybody introduce themselves, not because I'm not cool enough to do it, but I want to make sure I don't miss anything. Like, I want to make sure that it's such a complex conversation to have, right? And we're all experiencing AI from different places, and we hope different things for it and want different things from it.
My name is X, yeah, and I'm in tech, yeah. Good evening, y'all. First of all, I want to say it is so good to be back home. I am a Richmond native, yada da me, for sure. And so a little bit about myself. So my name is XIA. I am a researcher. I am an engineer. I've been in artificial intelligence for the last 13 years. I've been in tech for about 20 overall. I got my start with AI when I was a soldier in Afghanistan with special operations. Can't tell you what I did, but I can tell you I touched AI way back then. I spent time at Microsoft. I ended up doing a lot of stuff with all their favorite three-letter agencies, so building tools that don't exist. And then I went to commercial at Microsoft. I built like these crazy environments that we called ambient intelligence. So combining blockchain, not cryptos, another thing, not the NFTs, but blockchain, AI, and IoT together to fully automate an environment back in like 2017. and I went to Google. When I was at Google, I went to Google Research. And I was a little tired of coding. Might have been the carpal tunnel, might have just been the screens and me wanting to like be outside again. So I was like, yo, when I go to Google, I got to do some operational stuff. So of course, God wanted me to fail up. So I ended up going onto the ML Fairness team, which is responsible for checking every single algorithm across all of Alphabet, all of Google, all of Waymo, all the other companies that it owns to make sure that they were working well for humanity, to identify when there were issues and to work with the teams to fix them. I got tired of telling other people where their problems were, even though I was a Virgo, right? It's like, you're wrong. But I ended up shifting over and made two research teams of my own. And one of the research teams I created was a skin tone research team, which actually ended up teaching AI how to see black and brown skin tones, and also taught AI how to see folks with albinism, right? Wow. So on each end of the spectrum, marginalized people were incorporated. Now I have my own AI research firm. I work with very large companies, L'Oreal, Mozilla, LG, SAP, a bunch of VC funds helping guide their journey as well. And why do I do what I do? Because my grandmother, I remember when I was in community college at Berkeley City College.
Okay, okay.
And my grandmother, I was like trying to solve everything. It was like the hunger, it was like 08. So it was like the financial aid crisis, hunger, the kids, the BART train cards are demagnetizing with my cell phone. It was like trying to solve everything. And my grandma came and she said to me, she said, baby, when you can see a problem, it's because you have a part of the solution. And that's why I'm here today. Because the only reason I'm in this seat and you're not is because somebody poured into me freely and openly and allowed me to expand my imagination about what's possible. And I hope that tonight we'll all be able to expand your imagination about what's possible with AI.
That was the voice of our guest, XEYE, featured on one of the big events for 2025, which was the San Francisco Hip Hop Festival, where they had an entire night dedicated to AI technology. X spoke there, turned it out. We also had Rakim, the hip hop legend who started his own AI company. Folks from Will.i.am's company were there. It was just a night to remember. Maybe later on in the show we'll play some excerpts from that conference. But we want to get back into the conversation we started yesterday. We kicked things off looking at the year in review with technology and AI. We had our guests, Darian Hayward and Heyman, and we also had Quincy Phillips out of Silicon Valley breaking things down and giving us some keen insight. And then we started a conversation with XEYE. I want to run the beginning of that conversation back because there's so much information and inspiring words and sobering thoughts, as well as direction for us to take into 2026. So without further ado, let's turn the mic over to our conversation with XEYE right here on Hard Knock Radio. I had to have you on because you have your finger on the pulse, and we wanted to see what you would highlight in terms of what has transpired this past year. If you had to kind of sum up the world of tech and AI, what really stood out for you, and what do you want us to really grapple onto?
Yeah, so I feel like the last year in tech, at least in the media, has been focused on technological progress and this imaginary race between the US and China for who's going to have the best AI. Now, beyond that, what's been happening outside of just technological advancements, which are going to happen because it's a new field that everyone's rushing to try to get a hold of and try to be the leader in. But in addition to that, there's been a lot of work around the boundaries around AI systems that has currently come under attack. And so in the state of California, 32 of the world's 50 largest AI companies are headquartered in California. So when you write an AI law in the state of California, you're effectively regulating AI by proxy.
Right.
And if any company wants to do business in the state of California, which is now the fourth largest economy in the world, even if they're not based here, they'd end up having to follow those laws anyway. So in the last year, California has passed over 30 AI laws. You probably only heard of the one that was vetoed, that made the news. But we literally, from August to September of last year, we passed 17 AI laws.
What are some of the laws?
one of the laws that I personally really like was to update the criminal code. So there's a huge issue right now going on in schools and even between previous partners and even just some weirdos on the internet where they're using what are called undressing websites. So they're taking photos of people off of like social media sites. They'll take a picture of you. They'll run it through one of these undressing sites and it will generate deepfake nudes of you. And so This is now an issue in high schools around the world, not just in the U.S., not just in our states, but around the world. Where I remember seeing a case where there was one student who had done it to 50 of his female counterparts in his high school. Right.
Wow.
And so, unfortunately, because of the way the law was written, it was not really easy to prosecute if the deepfake image was non-consensual, just because it wasn't like the revenge porn laws were for things that we like actual video of you that's real. This wasn't real. So how do we regulate that? So we made it criminally illegal. Another law made it so that your likeness, once you pass away, so your voice, your face, your videos, etc., nobody can create deep fakes of you after you pass away without explicit consent of your estate. So that means once X is gone, there's not going to be a digital X unless I sign it in my will, and I'm not going to do that, right?
Right.
Some of the other AI laws were, there was one around transparency in the state of California where government agencies have to keep a record of what AI systems they're purchasing and what they're for. Hopefully that will make it easier to audit, because right now it's not easy to find out if your city or if your county is using algorithms. Often, even when you submit a FOIA request, they redact the bulk of the content and claim it's intellectual property. Another law, which is I think one that's most important, because right now there's a huge fear of deepfakes and not being able to tell the difference between reality and AI generated content, especially right. with the launch of tools like Sora or Google Veo, with those tools rising in popularity, the concern has grown even more. Well, last year, California passed earlier this year, California passed a law that would require watermarking of AI-generated content. And you've probably, if you've generated an image inside of Google Veo, you've seen like a little logo in the bottom right or the bottom left. Well, that's not actually the identifier, because the law specifies that the AI-generated content has to have a watermark that you cannot remove or is extraordinarily difficult to remove. And so that little logo thing is a placeholder for the computational changes they're making. So when your image is generated, you'll be able to take it to an identifier that same company has to create. So like, let's say it's Google. Google has Veo. Google has to create like a, is it an AI that came from Veo detector? Same thing like OpenAI will have to do. Now, the law doesn't fully go into effect until 2027. So you're probably like, why isn't this, or 2026. So you're probably like, hey, why isn't this already happening? Why didn't they do that at first? Because it's not fully in effect, but it will be at the top of the new year, which will make it easier to know if something is real or fake. I've seen that Google has already started to pilot that. So again, as much as we've seen over the last year, the arguments about DeepSeek and OpenAI and Gemini and a nano banana and who's winning, the real advancements of this year were figuring out how to let this technology loose on the people who are using it without it destroying them off top.
X-E-I-E-Y-E is our guest.
Yippee-I-A.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned this, because in the reporting of this president saying that he put an executive order so that AI would not be regulated, what you just described was not explained to people, at least with legacy media, right? And so now I think when people go, oh, this is what he's trying to get rid of, now there's a whole different thing, right? It has been sold that they are stopping you from being creative. You know, I want to have a picture on my wall and they're going to, you know, they're trying to stop me from doing that. But this year, it seems like something that was well thought out, and it seems like it comes from a place where a lot of stakeholders came together and said, this is what we want to have. With that in mind, what does it mean when a president is saying, we're going to put an executive order to override any sort of regulation. It seems like there's a plan to weaponize these tools against us, you know, especially around political events? Or will these companies, since most of them are here, will they self-regulate?
Self-regulation is a myth, because companies only exist to make profit and will do anything to do so. Okay. They have fiduciary duty, which is a legal responsibility to do so. So if there is a choice between doing what may be morally the right thing or objectively the quote unquote right thing versus the thing that's going to make money, the company and corporation itself, maybe not the people in it, are always going to go in that direction. And so this executive order is tough on two fronts. One, it's challenging states' rights, flat out. And I think that will be a legal battle. I don't know that the executive order will be able to be enforced, but I also don't know that the tech companies won't just use it as an excuse to not comply with laws. And so that's a risk. But the laws that are being passed are not all on the companies, right? Some of the laws that are being passed are around what people do with the AI tools. So for example, SB 243, which just was signed by Governor Newsom, it's a law regulating AI chatbots. So specifically, people are creating imaginary friends out of their ChatGPT or out of their Claude or out of their Gemini, where they're literally building actual romantic relationships, real friendships. I saw something the other day that said 3 out of every 10 teenagers has an AI friend. And wow. So with that, these technologies, because they are sycophants, which means they agree with you pretty much no matter what. They'll agree with you till the end, because they're designed to be word generators that create each next word based on what it thinks you want to hear. And so with that level of psychofancy, you've had instances of real kids who had real mental health issues or were going through real mental health crisis who came to these systems and talked about having suicidal thoughts, and the systems encouraged them and they actually took their lives. So SB 243 requires these AI platforms to prevent chatbots, their chatbots, from engaging in conversations about suicidal ideation, self-harm, or sexually explicit content with users, especially minors. Because believe it or not, minors were able to do this because there was no regulation against it. And so it says that you have to send like recurring alerts to users. And so every 3 hours, if they're a minor, reminding them that they're talking to an AI, not a real person.
Right? Real talk.
And so these types of things are not about we do or don't want ChatGPT to exist. It's about how we do and don't want those technologies to be used. And I think when we look at regulation as we want the companies to only build the technology this way, which is a very important part of regulation, we also miss out on the use case. So it'd be like only trying to regulate the way a seatbelt is developed for a car, but not regulating the rules of how we drive on the roads. And I think that we need both. And so this executive order, I believe, is spurred by some of the deepfake laws that were passed last year. One of the laws required one of the laws prevented or made it illegal for AI generated content to be used in political advertisements or campaigns within 90 days of an election. And Elon Musk is suing for that law, arguing that it's a violation of free speech. And so when you're looking at a larger set of why they might want to push that back, I think one element is that there's a very clear boundary around how deepfakes can be used and cannot be used to disrupt our democracy. And the other piece of that is that it's what the tech companies are saying, which is also another false flag, where they're saying, you can't regulate us. We're going to lose to China if you regulate us. You can't give us laws. It's going to slow down innovation. Regulation is going to make us not competitive. Well, the gag is, China has way stricter regulations for AI than the United States does. They require every single algorithm to be tested to make sure that it works well for different people in their populations before it's turned on. California don't have that. I could build a medical AI and sell it to Kaiser and they'd turn it on you without it ever being tested by anybody.
Right? Wow.
And so they have laws that require a central registry of the algorithms used by the government, right? And it's actually up and running. They have laws that require transparency and documentation of where the data came from that's used to make the AI. We don't have those laws outside of the state of California and of what I just mentioned. We only have one of those three types of, you know, regulations. And so I think that what's happening here is there's a desire for American tech companies who are building for profit and competing against China, who's building at the speed of community, because everything's open source where anyone can contribute to it. They're trying, the US is trying to move faster. And the only way that they perceive they can move faster is if they can continue to make us guinea pigs without repercussions. And I don't believe that that's the path to winning. I don't believe that it's morally, objectively correct or American for that matter. Like, it's not American to turn around and make the people who are subject to using these systems without their consents, having their lives changed, managed, or dictated by systems majority of them don't even want. And so, you know, again, these AI regulations, we have a lot more that are in store. We have like a Transparency Act, which requires them to create provenance data inside of their AI so that it's like digital watermarks that can't be removed, not just like a little logo in the bottom.
Right.
We talk about, there's also been an update, I think it was AB 316, which looked at claims where individuals were suing because they had been harmed by an AI system. And so it stopped the defendants from asserting a defense that the AI, like on its own, caused harm. And so they were able to raise other defenses like, hey, here's evidence I have relevant to how this caused harm for me, instead of just saying, oh, well, I don't know how the AI did it. Like, it gives you the opportunity to say, the AI made this decision about me because of some identity characteristic, and this is the impact it had. An example of that, right now, there's a class action lawsuit against an AI hiring company because the algorithms that they used have been exposed to be biased against older folks who are applying for jobs, as well as folks who are African-American. And so, again, to sue for that was a lot harder because the laws were older. And so now it makes it so that you're able to bring a clearer case to be able to, you know, bring that forward. And my favorite law, which just was passed on October 6th, is AB 325, which makes it illegal to use AI to create a common pricing algorithm, right? And so, for example, let's say that you are going into a grocery store to buy groceries right now, or like even if you have Instacart, they're using algorithmic pricing. So I might get higher prices than you for the same item, and we would never know. And so this makes it illegal to be able to, like, as any part of like a contract or like, in any way, it makes it any type of contract or commerce, it makes it unlawful for them to distribute like a common pricing algorithm. So that can be used for the fixed pricing algorithms in groceries, also for housing. There's a lawsuits, I think, in over 20 states against a company called RealPage, who is using AI to potentially violate antitrust laws and raise rent prices collectively in an area. So they go into like Atlanta and partner up with the biggest apartment buildings and in the city collectively raise rent by 20%. So this and also makes that explicitly illegal.
This is good to know and good to hear. And I'm glad you came on to explain that, and all this has been transpiring over the past year. One of the questions that I asked our other guest, X, was the role of data. And last time we had you on, you talked about, you know, we can start building our own things. And my question to them was really looking at how data has become a very important commodity. And if we talk about people power, we need to somehow be able to really, I don't know the question I'm asking with it, but we need to control, you know, or at least have a clear understanding of the people in our community, you know, the data, so to speak. How do you kind of wrestle with that? And then I'll just complicate the question a little bit more, especially when they're talking about building data centers every place they possibly can. So obviously harvesting that data is something that is of concern for some people, but maybe we need to be harvesting it for ourselves, or at least not releasing it. So the data question.
Okay, so data sets and data centers are two separate things, and I'll tackle them both individually. So AI does not exist without data. AI, no matter what domain you're in, if you're building an AI to recommend videos, you're building an AI chatbot like ChatGPT, you're building an AI that helps Tesla see on the road. No matter what type of AI you're building, they are pattern matching machines. So that means they are either learning from patterns to be able to execute tasks, or they're uncovering patterns within massive amounts of data sets. And so if there is no data, there is no AI. Now, a research paper came out last summer in 2024 called On the Dangers of Model Collapse or something like that. I can't remember the exact name of the paper, but if you look up the concept of model collapse, it will show you that paper. And basically, what model collapse is researchers discovered that if you feed an AI system or try to like train an AI system on data that was created by another AI, which is called synthetic data, that it breaks over time. It's like data incest, and it ends up losing concept of what the concepts are. So for example, let's say I ask it to generate a dog, and then it generates five images of a dog, and three of them are a golden retriever because maybe that's a more popular dog. One is a Sheltie, one is a Maltipoo.
Right.
And then I take those five pictures and then train an AI on it, right? Or I give it back to it to fine tune it or update it, right? Now, mind you, data sets used in AI are actually like exponentially larger. Like one of the data sets I needed to start a project at Google is like 300,000 images. So it's not really this small.
Right.
Just humor me here. And so what would happen is then I'd ask it to generate a dog again, and then maybe four out of the five are golden retrievers. And then as I keep doing that, it would only generate golden retrievers until it loses the concept of what a dog is.
Oh, wow.
And then it can't generate dogs anymore at all. And so basically what that shows us is that technologically, you cannot build a sustainable AI if you do not have organic human data. So organic human data is going to be, and is right now, the most valuable commodity of the foreseeable future, because none of these algorithms exist without the data that either teaches them the patterns they need to learn from or is full of patterns that they need to uncover to do something differently or do something with the patterns they uncover.
Let me ask you this. What is when it's collecting data? What are we talking about? Is it a specific type of thing, the way I talk, the way I dress? Can we just get the way I dress each day? We don't need to worry about the way I talk. Is it a combination of everything? What makes the human data so unique versus the synthetic data?
Yeah, the big difference is that human data often reflects more nuance in the real world, whereas synthetic data is generated by what an algorithm thinks the data should be. So real life is messy. Right. So let's take voice data, for example. When you talk to your Siri, your Google Assistant, or even to your ChatGPT, that's one type of AI called text to speech or speech to text, where it's taking what you say, converting it to text, feeding it to the AI. The AI generates a response and gives it back to you as text. So that's speech to text and then text to speech right back at you. Right. And so for that, the world of voice is messy. How many people speak English but have accents? If I only give that voice detection model to like transcribe what you say out loud, if I only give it examples of people speaking quote unquote proper English, then it's never gonna understand, you know, someone who has an accent because it wasn't trained on that data. So you might be someone who speaks English, but you have a accent because your first language is French, which is going to sound different than someone whose first language is Hindi, which is going to sound different than someone whose first language is Spanish versus Spanish they picked up in Chile versus, you know, Yoruba, which they picked up in Nigeria. And so, or Arabic, like it's all going to change. So if I tell an AI, generate what you think someone with a Spanish accent sounds like, it's not going to reflect what that might actually look like and the variation that looks like in the real world. And if an AI does not have an example of something, it can't create it. That data looks like everything that uses AI. It's voice data for all of the voice tools. It's our image data, like our face and our likeness for your face ID, so that those cool features when you're in Zoom, hey, are you there? It can detect if you're there or not. So in your camera, when it automatically changes the white balance or the lighting and makes your image a little bit clearer, it has to detect that there's a person there first. And there's an algorithm that does that. It's called a segmentation algorithm, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you are inside of your Gmail, how does it know to send things to spam? Because it's trained on written data to know what spam looks like. You want something that can write your emails for you. Well, it's got to have emails as examples. And so ideally, you would think that these multi-billion, now trillion-dollar corporations would pay the humans involved to gather the data to build their tools. And unfortunately, that's not what's happening for two reasons. One, there's no forcing function. They don't have to. They just stole almost every copyrighted book.
Right.
And got away with it. They didn't pay. All they had to do was buy one copy of the book. And then they wouldn't have violated copyright law. Instead, the argument is let's get rid of copyright, right?
Right.
And the other reason why there is no there's no payments going is because they've just changed their terms of service on their platforms. So instead of having to ask people permission, they just made it so when you click I agree, they get a right to use all your data anyway. So Zoom had a huge controversy last year because their terms of service had changed to where any recordings you had saved in Zoom Cloud, they could use forever in perpetuity. You were granting them a royalty-free license in perpetuity to use the content, the voices, the names, the likeness of whatever was stored in that cloud. I believe they modified their terms of service after some pushback. But you can imagine that all these other AI platforms are doing the same, especially when you connect third-party tools. So if you're in Gemini and you connect your Google Drive, there's implications there. The new versions of Microsoft Office by default train on everything that you type unless you go in and sort of take that toggle button off so that they aren't using your data. So there's no forcing function for them to pay you, and you're also agreeing by proxy to not be paid by not turning off those features or just by donating it because you're not even aware of that. So that's the issue with data sets. Now, data centers are something different. Data centers are just like warehouses of computers. Now, we've had data centers way before AI. Every single thing you do on a major platform is run on somebody's data center. So that thread you send out, that thing you post on Instagram, the comment that you write on that platform, the email that you send, the YouTube that you pull up, the songs that you listen to on these streaming platforms, the browsers that you use, all run their back-end technology through data centers. So inherently, a data center is just a place that instead of each company having to have a bunch of computers, they put all the computers in one place and they send all of your requests and all your engagements with their apps to that centralized computing power.
Right.
Now with AI, I want to be clear, the challenge with the data centers is twofold. One, there is one set of data centers by one company that is using methane gas to power the data centers. And that is Elon Musk has something called Colossus, which is a massive data center that uses methane gas to power its data center, which is then pouring formaldehyde into the air of the black community that is less than a mile away in Memphis, Tennessee, to now where that community has the highest rate of emergency visits for respiratory issues in the entire United States, and nobody is stopping it. Nobody is forcing him to use a different amount of power. And now that story has gone viral multiple times. But that's not every data center. Most data centers used solar power. Most of them are green at this point. They use closed looped cooling systems, which means they're either using a cooling liquid, or they'll take some water and keep recycling it over and over again within the data center. And so on the one hand, we've always had data centers, but now one company is doing really, really awful things with them. And on the other hand is the water concern. You hear that data centers are guzzling up all of our fresh drinking water. And I want to offer perspective on that. One, how many gallons? Okay, so the new data center that's supposed to be opening up, I read a, let me rephrase this. So I read a article that talked about a new data center that was going to be built that was going to take about 8 million gallons of fresh water in the state of Michigan. Right. And everyone, because that number sounds so huge, right?
Right.
Was freaking out. But I want to ask you, Davey, how many gallons of water do people use to shower in the United States?
I think it's between 10 and 12.
What, million?
Oh, I'm just thinking each person take a shower using 10 to 12 gallons of water. No?
Okay, so maybe, but like collectively, like how much do you, water? So it's like six to 8 million for this data center, which is probably right. going to keep recycling the water. Yeah. How much do you think people in the U.S. use every year just to take a shower?
Somewhere in the billions?
No, it's 1.4 trillion.
Wow.
Gallons of water every year.
One to take a shower.
4 trillion gallons of water.
That's drinking
every
water.
Year to shower.
Right.
And so while I agree that it's concerning that in certain water-stressed communities, right, where there are data centers being put up in places that might not have as much fresh water as the Great Lakes, Michigan area, where you're sticking them in places that are already stressed, that it can be dangerous for those environments. But also, so is you turning your shower on and waiting for the water to heat up. So is you brushing your teeth and leaving the water on when right. you're not using it. And so there is a combination of human behavior on both ends that is required to address the water shortage problem. And I'll tell you, one problem is exponentially larger than the other, where that 8 million gallons is like 0.00000 something percent of the amount of water we waste showering every year. And that water doesn't get recycled, right? And so on the flip side of that, the electricity is also another challenge. Now, the electricity usage and a lot of the water usage comes from the power grids. And the right. fact that the power grids are being strained by these massive computing centers is because the electrical grids are old. I read a study a few years ago. It might have been a report that the DOD put out, or it might have been a study. I honestly can't remember. That talked about how vulnerable the U.S. power grid is to attack. That the chances are there was like already foreign actors who had access to like 50 or 60% of the American grid.
Right.
Because it's old. If you give me your old Nokia cell phone with Snake on it, I can do a lot more things with that from a security standpoint than I could do with an iPhone 17 or a Galaxy S25 or a Google Pixel 10.
Right. Right.
Because the technology has changed. And so there needs to be a push, regardless of if data centers are the forcing function.
Right.
We need to upgrade our electrical grid. We need more sustainable power methods. If we're talking about this war, quote unquote, between the U.S. and China, they are kicking our butt when it comes to power. And so they are going to be able, and I don't mean like power in a systemic sense, I mean literal energy, and
right.
renewable energy, that they are going to be able to scale and build more and more and more data centers to be able to build better AI than the U.S. does. And so the solutions to this are a fewfold. One, the data centers that are using damaging methods to power their facilities, there has to be some level of collective accountability. And even though the videos I've seen about it on social media have had millions of views, nothing has stopped it. And so there needs to be some collective coming together and figuring out what to do before one of those data centers ends up in your neighborhood. So you don't want to be a NIMBY, not in my backyard, about data centers. The second is with water usage. In areas that are water constrained or are already starved for resources, pass local ordinance that they can't put data centers there. I've seen a few cities in the past couple of weeks who have done that, where they've blocked data center projects because they're concerned either about the smaller towns, they're concerned about their already small electrical grids or their water supply. And the third on that is with these computing centers, understand that these types of data centers are temporary. They're only needed, and the only reason why we need so many more of them is not because of the AI that we're building, but because you're using the AI. So there's training an AI model, which is something that you do basically like once. Like you run it, right. you do a training run. It might be like 4 days, but then you don't need the data center again. right? I've seen people do 30-day training runs. But then until you do another training run, you don't need the computing power. So all of the computing power is needed for what's called inference, which is where you're actually engaging with the AI. So it's when you type in what video you want to watch on YouTube, and then it does the calculation for the recommendation. It's when you go to one of these large language models and you type in, I'm feeling sad, talk to me about the problems I'm having with my partner, and it processes that prompt and sends it back. All of that is inference. And because people are exponentially using these tools way more, whether it's to write your emails, whether it's to, you know, find things on the internet, whether it's to make an imaginary friend or imaginary partner, right? The volume of the use has required exponentially more computing power to serve how much we're engaging it. Again, this is temporary, though, until there are larger technological advancements in quantum. So where current computers are operating in binary systems, you know, the one or the zero, it's either on or it's off. It's either there's something in the file, there's something on my hard drive, or there's not, right? It's not, so there's not like leeway in that. Quantum computers fundamentally operate differently. Instead of being like a light switch, like it's on or it's off, it's a light dimmer where it's both on and off and everything in between all at the same time. So what that means on a computational level for data centers is that what we're able to power right now with one of these massive data centers, like let's say the size of Colossus, we'll be able to do with computer chips that might take up the same amount of space as like my laptop.
Right.
Because the computing power is going to get exponentially different. So we won't need these massive facilities in the same way.
And this is where China has been moving in that direction.
U.S. has too. I mean, Google is one of the world leaders in quantum. They've actually, because they call this, believe it or not, they call it the race for quantum supremacy.
Wow.
You can't make this up. It's called the race for quantum supremacy. And whoever solves quantum computing first, meaning that you're able to make it work at room temperature, you're able to stabilize it enough to be able to consistently operate on it without it changing states and losing your data, is going to win the race for quantum supremacy. And so in California in particular is where a lot of the quantum research is happening, down in Santa Barbara. I know Microsoft and Google have massive quantum facilities. You know, Caltech is huge in the quantum space. UC Santa Barbara is huge in the quantum space. And so for quantum, American companies have made a lot more advancements there, at least publicly. I can't say what, you know, another country does and doesn't have behind closed doors. But those advancements are here and they're coming, and they're getting closer to room temperature quantum computers, because previously you had to keep them in like cold storage areas that were like cold, like space cold. And so now it's becoming more commercial.
We're getting ready to wrap things up. We've been, you know, been hit over the dome with a lot of incredible information from XEYE. As we close out 2026, two things that you want people listening to do with respect to tech and AI, and anything that you're excited about that's coming down the pipe that we should really, you know, be chomping at the bit for.
2026. Man, this year flew by. I can't believe we're like a couple weeks away from that. 2026, you are going to see a massive advancement in the quality of image and video generation models, where you will not be able to tell visually from an eye test that it's AI. Wow. Right now, you still kind of can. Some of the lip movements are off. Maybe some of it looks a little too edited. I have seen some of these tools behind closed doors. You cannot tell that it's not humans involved, or that it wasn't, that a tool generated it from a prompt.
Wow.
You're also in 2026 going to see a lot more of a push for local AI, meaning instead of you running or going to someone else's website to run an AI, you'll have an AI on your phone that's yours, that's private, that isn't attached to a major tech company, that isn't taking your data, that you can also use in offline mode, that will allow you to interact with these systems in a more private way while still benefiting from the value that they can bring on a text, image, and video level. I also think that you are going to see a massive battle over what rules these AI companies have to follow and how they follow them. We're already starting to see that with the executive order that was signed. Now, I want to remind everyone, an executive order is not a law. So right. California, you don't have to listen to that. But what that looks like will determine the future of not just AI regulation, but the future of everything where states' opinions differ from the federal government. So that could be, if this is successful, it could trickle down into everything else where states have a different opinion, such as abortion, illegal immigration, social services, such as, Well, you get the gist, where there's like medical marijuana, for example, right? Mm. Like, this could set a very dangerous precedent. And so I think it's probably one of the most important developments in AI that we're going to see follow for the foreseeable future, because it has the potential to shift democracy fundamentally in the way that we tend to operate. And so I think in 2026, what I want everyone to look out for is how you are engaging yourself in these tools, how your community is engaging these tools, and how you're choosing to allow these tools to show up or not show up in your reality at every level. Yeah. If you don't want to talk to an AI when you go through a drive-through, then figure out how to stop it. Laws, ordinances, yeah. Right? If you don't want teachers or school districts using AI to grade your students' end of year tests, then you got to make that a law. And it don't got to be at a state level. You don't got to become a politician. You just go to the city council, right. Get a group right. of people together, get a bunch of parents to go to one meeting, right? And make sure that that's not there. And so I think 2026 is the year of sight and the year of movement, right? So 2026 is the year where we see clearly how these tools are being used and are not naive and thinking that, oh, it's just ChatGPT, it's just my email writer, but actually look at how these tools are being deployed in the world and decide what we agree with and do something about it.
Real talk.
If we don't, 2027 is going to look like a world full of people who were made to be the guinea pigs of experimental technologies, and the damage that has already done over the past 10 years that has disproportionately affected certain groups of people, right. Historically have been disproportionately affected by the infrastructures of the places that they live, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are going to be put in probably the worst position we've been in the past 50 years. And I genuinely mean that, because it's not going to be about individual beliefs. It's going to be, well, I'm sorry you feel discriminated against, but that's what the data said. It's not me.
Wow.
I'm not biased against you. It's what the algorithm said.
Right.
And so it will automate and encode these things in a way where these systems that we can't audit because it's intellectual property, quote unquote, of a company, will become normal day-to-day across medicine, across government services, across education, across healthcare, across social services, across grocery shopping where they're changing your prices, across social media content, etc. So we're at an inflection point where what we do in 2026 will determine the next 10 years of what reality looks like. And the foreseeable future of what society looks like for different groups of people trying to find cohesion. So this is the moment. It really is now or never. We either step up and prevent these systems from harming us, or we sit back and watch them automate away all of the progress we have made collectively, particularly as an American society over the past 40 years, will be gone. So not to be a doomer, but time is not on our side here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you coming, and we'll have to have you back. We've been talking to XEYE, breaking things down, looking at the year 2025 in tech and what to expect in 2026. And I think you ended it on a sobering but hopefully inspiring point. We can't put our head in the sand, can't act like it's not existing. Head on the swivel, and we gotta put shoulder to the grind. And I'm glad that you were able to come on here and keep us educated. We're gonna take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
For a long time, I wanna see the sunshine cracking through the silence with a fire on my mind. Voices raised in rhythm, every step a sacred sign. We gon' rise above the fear, always backed by the divine. They're snatching families for no reason, locked in cages with no way out. Stripped of work, dignity drowned, while the rich just laugh and count. The streets feel heavy and hope gets lost in anger and disarray. But even in the darkest hour, we will rise and win the day. Gonna rise and win the day, pushing pain and fear away. Ain't no way they're gonna keep us down. We rise like seeds through concrete ground.
Brighter days are coming. Brighter days are coming.
They locking judges, killing truth, trying to break what justice means. Humbling stars who shine too bright, afraid of young black kings and queens. But we ain't built to bow or beg. We break the chains, we flip the script. What they fear is in our blood, and we don't fold, we lead, we live. Gonna rise and win the day, pushing pain and fear away. Ain't no way they're gonna keep us down. We rise like seas through concrete ground.
Brighter days are coming. Brighter days are coming.
We're gonna rise and win the day, pushing pain and fear away. Ain't no way they're gonna keep us down. We rise like seeds through concrete ground.
Brighter days are coming.
Hard knock, hard knock, hard knock radio.
It was was written. 2012 came and went. Sages once predicted that this would be our end. But the first day of 2013, people woke up, clear the smoke screen. No apocalypto, so run out, get that crypto. Empire birthed a monarch, my new life on the sonar. Even I start new beginnings at the top of the fall of the system. It was at this instant God revealed to his children that we were at the beginning of the end of the beginning. Word is bond, and bond is sacrament. And I've been clocking every incident ever since. Light sessions of recession, black president, more depression. Grieving processions, hella weapons, hella weapons. But none of them form will prosper. God the spirit can't conquer. Ancestors on the roster, ready to run up like blah blah. Ain't doing this for an Oscar, I'm doing it for Oscar. Acting up for Trayvon, I can still hear his holler. They want us agonizing, paralyzed, overanalyzed. They fantasize and devise a plan to atrophy the spirit man. Neural pathways traumatized, so apathy the compromise. Cause if you cannot care, you will not care to fight. Don't slip quietly into that dark night. Pavlovian dog might drool, but he won't bite. Render dependent on a bell's chime. No hunger, but ravenous and appetite. The apocalypse, revelation of truth. Don't let them feed you all the bulls that they spew, nah. The apocalypse, revelation of truth. It's the end of the world, the world we knew. New era, remove the scales from your eyes. Brother, see anew or refuse to be alive. New era, remove the scales from your eyes. Sister, see anew or refuse to be alive.
No. Wake up, it's a brand new day.
It's a brand new day.
It's your choice if you gon' live it or not.
What you gon' do?
You feel me? What they say.
It's a new era, the scales off your eyes. Brother, see anew, and you will be alive. It's a new era, the scales off your eyes.
Hard knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN, at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, you just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard knock, radio, let's go.
Big shout to Nita and Davey D.
Yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio. Kinda crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue.
Yeah.
Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat till they ready from the steel gray beef. Say please, baby, they'll save you a seat at the table with their great bread making his peace. Say you peace to their lovers, our neighbor to please. Make some shade on your name in the street. Look up, hey, David G.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
Thank you. is KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help